The next file that we want to talk about in the Kingdom Animalia is the phylum Arthropoda. The phylum Arthropoda includes organisms such as your spiders, insects, crabs, lobsters, and those types of organisms. The phylum Arthropoda are triploblastic. They are coelomate with bilateral symmetry, which means that they do have some cephalization as well, typically. The phylum Arthropoda, some of the key characteristics is that they have, the phylum Arthropoda has an exoskeleton made up of chitin. Okay. We have an endoskeleton, and many animals have an endoskeleton. What's the difference between an endo and an exoskeleton? Okay, so exoskeleton means their skeletons on the outside of their body instead of on the inside like ours with bones. So they have this exoskeleton made up of chitin. We actually mentioned chitin clear back at the first of the semester when we were talking about classes of molecules. And I don't know, can anybody remember what class of molecule chitin belonged to? From way back when? You have a 1 in 4 chance, right? I'm guessing. This is kind of a good review for final. It has to be their lipids, amino acids, proteins, lipids, nucleic acids, proteins, or carbohydrates. It's a carbohydrate, very complex carbohydrate. Okay, so they have this exoskeleton of chitin. Another characteristic that we see in the Arthropoda that we haven't seen in other phyla before this is that they have pair-jointed appendages that we call legs or arms. So this is the first phylum that we've talked about that has pair-jointed appendages. We will actually talk about other phyla that have pair-jointed appendages, but this is the first. Okay. So another characteristic that Arthropoda has, major evolutionary advance, is that they have what we call tagmatization. Tagmatization is the specialization of a body part or a body region for a particular function. Okay, and I'm going to show you some examples of tagmatization here in just a minute. Before we do that, however, let me just mention that the phylum Arthropoda is the largest phylum in the kingdom Animalia in terms of diversity of species. About 79% of all animal species belong to the phylum Arthropoda. There's also quite a large number, there are large numbers of individuals. If we were to look at all organisms, including plants, fungi, protists, monera, everything else, the phylum Arthropoda makes up over 50% of all species of all organisms on the face of the earth. And so it's a very diverse group of organisms. The most diversity occurs within the particular class within this phylum called the class Insecta, and we'll talk about the insects. And within the insects, there's one order, the order Coleoptera, which are the beetles, that make up about 50% of all animal species. Okay, so the beetles are by far and away the most diverse group, but the phylum as a whole is much more diverse than any of the other phyla that we've talked about. This is kind of second place is the phylum Mollusca that we talked about a couple of days ago. We haven't talked about the phylum Chordata yet, which is the next largest, but the other phyla are relatively small in terms of diversity. So if we look at some arthropods, this is a bug, and notice that it has pair-jointed appendages here on either side of the body. This is the first group of organisms that we've seen that has that. This is a fly, and again, you can see those pair-jointed appendages. In addition, you can kind of see that its body's hard, it kind of looks hard. That's the exoskeleton of chitin. And the other characteristic that I said is a big evolutionary advance in the arthropoda is they have tagmatization. If you look here, there are a number of body segments that are specialized as the head, another group of body segments that are specialized as the thorax on the fly, and then another group of segments that are specialized as an abdomen on the fly. Okay. So that's what tagmatization is a specialization of body regions for a particular function. Okay, just some other arthropods here, a butterfly, a beetle. Okay. Now, with all the diversity in the arthropoda, we're not going to spend as much time talking about internal structures as we have in the other organisms. Okay. We're going to kind of generally go over some of the internal characteristics and then talk about them in general. Okay. First of all, if we look at internal structures of the arthropod, one characteristic that arthropods have is that they have a dorsal brain with a ventral nerve cord. What other phylum did we talk about that had that characteristic? Yeah, Annelida, right? The segmented worms that we just talked about on Monday. So they have that same type of nervous system. This is a little bit more complex than the annelid nervous system. Their brain is more complex, I should say. But we believe that the arthropods probably evolved from the annelids. So they have a dorsal brain, a ventral nerve cord. Notice they do have a complete digestive tract with a mouth and an anus. This is a picture of a grasshopper here. In this digestive tract, we do see modifications within the digestive tract. In the case of a grasshopper, we see a crop and a gizzard. But if you were to look at a mosquito digestive tract, you probably wouldn't expect a crop and a gizzard, right? Why? They feed on fluids, right? But you will see specializations in the mosquito digestive tract as well. And so what we're going to say with the arthropoda is they have a complete digestive tract with modifications to help them digest whatever they feed on. Okay, does that make sense? So it's not just a straight shot gut. There's modifications of the gut so that complex digestion can occur with whatever they feed on. All right. So their digestive systems may vary. Some of them actually have stomachs. Some of them have crops and gizzards. Some of them have ceca, as we talked about, those little outgrowths like in the leeches. But there's some modification in the digestive tract. Okay. Any questions about that? You'll notice here that there's also, in this picture, this is a female grasshopper. There's just oviducts and a vagina, so the sexes are separate in the arthropoda. And typically, reproduction only occurs by sexual reproduction, with a couple of exceptions. And those exceptions, there are some arthropods that can reproduce asexually using parthenogenetic asexual reproduction. Okay. Anybody remember what parthenogenetic asexual reproduction was? Remember I gave you the big long story about me working at the bee lab? You remember that? And I could tell which ones were going to be male and which ones were going to be female because what? Some were fertilized and some weren't. In other words, parthenogenetic asexual reproduction is when males are produced that are just an individuals, whereas the females are a result of sexual reproduction. That occurs in some arthropods, but not all of them. So some of them have parthenogenetic asexual reproduction. Okay. Any questions about that? Now, all arthropods have an open circulatory system, which is a little bit different than the annelids. We said the annelids had a closed circulatory system. But we said when we were talking about the mollusks that the open circulatory system was generally considered to be less advanced from an evolutionary perspective. That's not necessarily true in the arthropods. And the reason why is because their circulatory system functions differently than most other animals. In most animals, the circulatory system has two functions. The first is to move gases throughout the body, right? Okay, oxygen and carbon dioxide, so that respiration can occur throughout the body. The second major function of the circulatory system is to move nutrients throughout the body, so that all of the cells can have nutrients in them. Okay. Now, in the arthropoda, they only have really one of those two functions, and that is to move nutrients throughout the body. They have a completely separate respiratory system that we're going to talk about here in a minute that is fairly unique. And so respiratory gases, oxygen and carbon dioxide, are not moved in the circulatory system. Therefore, it really doesn't need to be all that efficient, okay, because all they're moving around is nutrients, not oxygen and carbon dioxide. Okay. Any questions about that? So what about this respiratory system that's different? They have what we call a tracheal respiratory system. Now, this tracheal respiratory system is different from most other organisms that we're going to talk about. Typically, when organisms have a respiratory system, such as in humans, they have one particular area of the body that is used for respiration, and then the gases are actually moved via the circulatory system throughout to other parts of the body, right? Okay. That's not true in the arthropoda. In the arthropoda, the openings to the respiratory system are typically found on the thorax and abdomen, or towards the back of the organism. And these little holes that lead into the respiratory system are called spiracles. Now, what happens that's different with this respiratory system is this is a series of tubes that run throughout the body of the organism. And so when oxygen or air enters the spiracle, it runs through the tubes, and basically that same air can get clear to the head. Okay, so gas exchange occurs across the surface of this tracheal system. So it would be kind of like us, instead of having a lung system, if we had a series of little tubes that we breathed into, and those tubes went to every part of our body so the gas exchange could occur. Does that make sense? Any questions about that? Now, some of the arthropods will have a little bit different type of tracheal system. For example, in spiders, their spiracle is found on the underside of their abdomen, okay? And they actually have a structure that's called a book lung. And what it is it's kind of like bellows. I don't know if you know what bellows are, fan of fire. Kind of like a book, it opens and closes. And that's what pumps the air in and out of the tracheal system. In insects, they really don't have a book lung. The way that they bring air in and push air out of their tracheal system is by muscle movement. Okay, just contracting their body and making their body a little bit bigger, and those types of things. Okay. Any questions about that? Okay, well with the arthropoda, there are so many arthropods that there's a lot of diversity, and so that's really all I want to talk about as far as characteristics of the entire phylum. We're going to talk about a number of different taxa within the phylum Arthropoda and talk about their characteristics and how they differ from other arthropods. The first of these taxa that we want to talk about is the class Meristemata. The class Meristemata are the horseshoe crabs and king crabs. Okay? And they're quite a bit different from the crustaceans or from any other type of arthropod. This is a typical horseshoe crab here. These organisms are basically found in marine environments. And the key characteristic of these crabs is that they have this long tail-like structure. We call this a telson. Okay. Also, their shell structure, or their exoskeletal structure, is fairly unique. When you look at a horseshoe crab from the top, you'll notice that it looks like the hoof of a horse, right? The cephalothorax anyways. And on the underside, when you look at the edge of the shell, it looks like what? Horseshoe, okay? These organisms have two main body regions, and we'll see this in quite a few of the arthropods. They have what we call a cephalothorax and an abdomen. So, going back here, this would be the cephalothorax. So this part of the body contains the head, the sensory structures, the legs, and all of those types of things. The abdomen, which is this part of the organism, does not contain any appendages, and really what it mostly contains is the openings to the outside world, like the spiracles for the most part. That's where you'll find the reproductive openings for the organism. If you look internally, that's where most of, or a lot of the digestive system is found, and also where the reproductive system is found, okay? So they have two main body regions, a cephalothorax and an abdomen. And then, of course, they have that telson coming off the abdomen. Notice as well that these organisms have no antennae, okay? So they don't really have any antennae in these organisms. Again, this is looking at the underside of the horseshoe crab. Notice they have numerous pairs of legs. We're not going to talk about it too much with the horseshoe crab. But these organisms are basically predators. And what they feed on mainly is they feed on polychaete worms. Okay? And what are polychaete worms? Talked about them on Monday.
The segmented worms, those that live in the marine.
Yeah, they're the segmented worms, the marine segmented worms. Remember they had the parapodia on them? Okay? That's their main source of food. However, they will feed on molluscans. Such as bivalves and sometimes gastropodes. Where would you find horseshoe crabs in the world? Well, this is a map showing where horseshoe crabs are found. They're found along the east coast of the United States, down into the Gulf of Mexico, and also the east coast of Asia. There are some places throughout the world where horseshoe crabs are populations are on the decline. One of the reasons for that is because they have been overfished in some places throughout the world. Now, you probably have never eaten a horseshoe crab, probably never will. But what happens is fishermen are using nets to catch fish. They get quite a few horseshoe crabs in their nets, and they'll bring those horseshoe crabs in, and they sell them to factories. And what they do with the horseshoe crabs is they actually grind them up and use them as nutrient supplements in horse feed, dog food, even sometimes as fertilizers. Okay. Also, the horseshoe crab, the blood or hemolymph, we don't call it blood in arthropods, we call it hemolymph. But the hemolymph from these horseshoe crabs was important in developing tests for HIV. Any questions about the horseshoe crabs?
How large is it?
Some of the horseshoe crabs, they can vary in size. There's quite a few different species. Some of them are the cephalothorax and abdomen are this big. For those of you that are in lab, we actually have some specimens that are plate size or a little bit bigger, okay, about that thick. So they can get rather large. Telson's about, you know, a foot long, foot and a half long. But there is quite a bit of variability. Okay. The next class that we want to talk about is the class Arachnida. The class Arachnida include the spiders and their allies. Now we're actually going to talk about a number of orders within the class Arachnida. This is one of the most common classes that we see in our environment around here. So we're going to talk about orders within the class Arachnida. Okay. So the spiders and their allies. This is a typical arachnid. Most of you would call it a spider, right? This is another type of arachnid. Most of you would call this a scorpion. Now with the arachnids, they have two body regions. Again, they have the cephalothorax and the abdomen. In addition, the organisms have no antennae, so in that case, they're similar to the meristemata, okay? And how many appendages do arachnids have? How many pairs of appendages?
4, 10.
Still don't have the right number. They actually have 6 pair of appendages, okay? Now, when we're talking about appendages, those are any paired jointed structures on the body. And if you count the number of legs on this scorpion, it has 1, 2, 3, 4 pairs of legs, okay? So the arachnids generally have 4 pair of legs. They then have 1 pair of appendages that are what we call chelicera, and 1 pair of appendages that we call pedipalpi. Now the chelicera and pedipalpi are typically modified appendages, and they're modified for one of two different functions typically, either for feeding or for sensory structures.
On this paper it says 10 pairs of appendages.
That's wrong.
Okay.
I must have made a typo. Okay. So the chelicera and pedipalpi are appendages that are typically modified, as I said, for feeding or sensory functions. In the case of the scorpion, you can actually see the pair of pedipalpi right here. What are those pedipalpi modified as?
Weapons
or for feeding, for catching food, right? Okay. And so these pedipalpi in this case are what we call chelate. The term chelate means pincher-like, okay, or claw-like. And so they have chelate pedipalpi in the scorpions. They actually have chelicera that are right here around the mouth. I don't know if any of you have ever watched a scorpion eat anything. They actually have little appendages that help to push the food into the mouth. And those are the chelicera. Now with the spider, you really don't see in this picture either the pedipalpi or the chelicera. In the true spiders, the chelicera are modified as poisonous fangs, and the pedipalpi are modified as sensory structures. And we'll see some of these in some pictures a little bit later on. But if you've never seen this on a spider, next time you see a spider, get down and really watch it close before you kill it. And what you'll see is you'll see these little leg-like structures that kind of tap the ground in front of the spider. Those are the pedipalpi, and they're used as sensory structures. Okay. The chelicera that are modified as poisonous fangs, you have to look a little bit closer at the spider. Okay. Any questions about the arachnids in general characteristics? So within the class Arachnida, we're going to talk about a number of orders. The first one is the order Scorpionis. The order Scorpionis, of course, this one's easy to remember. There are the scorpions. Okay. Now, the scorpions actually have a couple of characteristics that make them fairly unique among the arachnids. The first characteristic is the chelate pedipalpi. There's going to be another order of arachnids that do have those chelate pedipalpi. But the thing that really distinguishes the scorpion is the terminal segment of the scorpion is modified as a poisonous sting. Okay. Now the poisons from this sting can be very toxic. There are some scorpions throughout the world that are deadly toxic. Okay, they can kill you. The scorpions that we have around here, I've never been really hurt by them. When they've stung me before, it basically feels kind of like I don't even think it's as severe as a bee sting. But they are scary looking. I was down in St. George. I told you about the scorpion I caught down in St. George. I was down in St. George with a class, and we were rolling over rocks looking for scorpions and snakes and all sorts of good animals that spend the day underneath rocks. And we rolled over this big rock. It was, you know, pretty large, and I had a couple of students help me. We rolled it over. And there was this gallery. You could see where there had been scorpions underneath there. And we probed around looking for the scorpions for a while. Couldn't really see it. About that time, I was getting thirsty out in the desert, so I pulled out my water bottle and kind of just leaned up against this rock, sat down and leaned up against this rock. And all of a sudden, there was just searing pain right here on my arm. And I look like this, look back, and there's a scorpion that's about this long, attached to my arm, blood running all over the place from where it had pinched me, and it was stinging me. And I'll tell you what, the pinching part hurt worse than the stinging, I think. But I actually got the last laugh on that scorpion. It's actually in our collection now. I've never really had any problems. If you're allergic to bee stings, you're probably also allergic to the sting of the scorpion. The chemicals in them are very, very similar. Okay. But they do use that sting to immobilize their prey. Right? Any questions about that? This is a species of scorpion that's found down in the Four Corners area of Utah. This is probably the most dangerous scorpion we have in the United States, at least in the, you know, up off of the Mexican border kind of a thing. There have been some people that it's been claimed that they died because of a sting from this species of scorpion, but it's not really been proven. You know, they could have died for other reasons, and then the scorpion started feeding on them. I don't know. Okay.
What kind's that common?
I don't know the common name for it. But they're basically found down in the Four Corners area. And I've caught them before and messed around with them.
Those are the ones we've seen over in Phoenix over spring break?
Probably not.
Really?
No. This group of scorpions here, their range is kind of Four Corners area down into New Mexico. More in that country. It's probably a different species. Just another picture of a scorpion. Any questions about the scorpions? One thing about the scorpions is they do have some parental care of their young, which is not very common in most arthropods, or in most insects for that matter, any arthropoda. You can see that what happens is when the young are born, they actually crawl up on mom's back, and they are carried around by mom for a short period of time, and she kind of protects them. However, they can't stay on mom's back for too long, because if they stay on there for too long, they're going to be eaten by one of their siblings or by their mom. Okay? But she does protect them for a short period of time, which is not real common in other arthropods. Okay? Any questions about the scorpions? The next order is the order Araneae, which are what we call the true spiders. Okay? Now, the key characteristic of the true spiders is their chelicera are modified as poisonous fangs. So the question, you know, people will always bring me a spiders to my office, and they'll ask me, is this spider poisonous? What's the answer? If it is a spider, it's poisonous, okay? Because all spiders are poisonous. What they really want to know is the spider poisonous enough that it's going to what? Kill me or send me to the hospital, right? Most spiders that we have around here really are kind of harmless, but if they do bite you, you've all seen this before, you'll get little red bumps on your skin, and that's your immune system actually fighting those toxins. Okay. Around here, really, there's only two spiders that really cause a lot of problems with humans, the black widow and the hobo spider. The other characteristic that spiders have, I should have mentioned, kind of missed this one. So they have chelicera that are modified as poisonous fangs, and all spiders do have spinnerets on the posterior portion of their abdomen, so they can spin webs. Okay. Typically, spiders are predatorial. You can see that this spider here is feeding on a butterfly. Okay. This spider here is feeding on a fly. Now, the thing that's nice about this picture is we can actually see the chelicera that are modified as the poisonous fangs here. Okay. And all spiders have those. It's just typically they're so small that we don't really see them. This is the main spider that people are worried about around our area, and that's the black widow. If you're bitten by a black widow, it can make you very ill. If you're bitten in certain parts of your body, if you're bitten around your chest or your throat, it could actually kill you. It's not likely if you got medical attention, but the bites from these can be fairly serious. Okay. Tarantulas are true spiders, and they are poisonous. Okay. I've had pet tarantulas in my life before. When I first married my wife, I had a couple pet tarantulas that I used to keep in my bathtub, and she didn't appreciate that too much, so I had to get rid of my pet tarantulas. But I also got rid of them once I got kids, and the reason why is tarantulas, you know, a lot of times tarantulas are pretty docile, and you can let them crawl on you and everything else, but they will bite occasionally, and they have enough toxins that they can make small children very, very ill. Okay. So, this is just a close-up of the spinnerets of a spider producing web material. Some webs, most of the time you think of a web, you think of a structure that is used to help catch prey, where the, for example, the fly flies into the web and it's caught in the web. Not all webs do that. This is a funnel spider. And their web, actually an insect could come along and it wouldn't catch the spider. The web wouldn't catch the spider in the web. But what it does is, as the insects are coming along, they make vibrations, and those vibrations go down to the hole. And this spider is actually an ambush predator. What it does, it pops up out of the hole and attacks its prey really quick. These are common in our deserts around here, and my kids love it. You can actually kind of coax the spider out sometimes. What you do is you take a stem of grass, kind of twist it between your fingers while it's bouncing on the web, and those funnel spiders, they're about this large, they'll pop up out of the hole. And every time they do that, I jump really bad. My kids think that's hilarious. And I mean, it's kind of like watching a horror movie, you know, somebody's going to jump out from behind the corner. You know it's going to happen, but when that does, still, you know, the shock value, kind of like the same thing. Some of the webs are very beautiful. When the spiders, there is a distinct sexual dimorphism in spiders. These two spiders are different sizes here. The one on the left is actually a male, and the one on the right is a female. The male spiders are generally much smaller than the females. Most of you have heard of the black widow spider story, where the black widow feeds on its mate. That is true of most spiders. And what's kind of interesting is the males typically lay down and let the females feed on them. Okay. The reason behind that is generally males can only reproduce once in the spiders. And once they reproduce, they're going to die. And so we think that kind of the reason why that it's evolved this way is because the males realize kind of that they're going to die. They allow the females to eat them, which gives the females more nutrients. Therefore, it's more likely that their sperm or genes are going to be passed on to the next generation. Does that kind of make sense? Now, one thing about spiders is they have behavioral specificity that we talked about in speciation. And the males, when they're trying to get a female to mate with them, they stroke the females, and if they don't stroke the female exactly right, they get eaten before they get to mate. Okay, so it's a behavioral specificity. This is showing. I thought I had another picture. I must have pulled it out. This is a black widow with her egg mass. You can actually see the chelicera modified as poisonous fangs here. Okay. Now, some of you, when I said we only have two spiders that we need to be worried around here about are the black widows and the hobo spiders, some of you probably thought about, what about brown recluses? Anybody think that? Actually, we don't have brown recluses around here. Okay. If a doctor tells you your bite came from a brown recluse, you know your doctor doesn't know what the heck they're talking about most of the time. Okay. You were probably bitten by a hobo spider. The brown recluses only live in warm, humid environments. And I'll tell you what, we are not very humid around here. Okay. There are some cases of brown recluse bites in Utah, but generally they occur in individuals that work at furniture stores, most commonly, or places where packaging is coming in from some other place. And what will happen is the brown recluse will actually come up in the packaging, or other places, as if you're moving somebody from, say, Georgia to Utah, you know, you might get a brown recluse that way. But we don't have any brown recluses living in Utah. Okay. It's an endemic species. Here is why spraying your yard for spiders doesn't help a whole lot. And you can see in every egg mass there are thousands of babies. And so spraying for spiders doesn't do a whole lot of good. It just is a psychological factor if you want to pay for that. Any questions? Yeah.
Why are arthropods so white when they're born?
Basically, they don't have their exoskeleton formed yet completely. So that's kind of why they're whitish.
Do you have a picture of a hobo spider anywhere?
I don't. Not here in this presentation. But they have, the easiest way to tell the hobo spiders, there's not many spiders around here that have stalked eyes. And hobo spiders have stalked eyes, so they're brown recluses. That's why people think they are brown recluses. They'll actually have a little brown mark on their back, on their cephalothorax. But if this was their cephalothorax, they actually have some eyes that are out on a little stalk, like that. Yeah. And they are fairly aggressive, whereas brown recluses are not aggressive at all. Any questions about the true spiders, the order Araenae? The next order within the class arachnida that we want to talk about is the order of carry. The order of carry includes your mites and ticks. The mites and ticks both have what we call sucking mouth parts, and that's kind of the key characteristic. But rather than getting into specifics of mouth parts, typically you can tell mites and ticks by their body shape. They typically have a pear-shaped body, as you can see here. It also looks almost like their legs are coming out. Here's their cephalothorax right here. Here's their abdomen. It almost looks like their legs are coming from their abdomen because their cephalothorax is quite small. These ticks right here are waiting on the ends of blades of grass. They're waiting for you to come by so that they can get on you and get a meal. Ticks are parasitic and feed on the blood of vertebrates. The mites, some of them are also parasitic, and probably many of you have mites on your body right now, but some of them are also scavenger type organisms. Okay. This is a tick that's attaching to a human. Now, ticks, when they attach to you, ticks do carry diseases. You can get Rocky Mountain spotted fever from ticks. You can also get a disease called Lyme disease. However, Lyme disease is not very common around here. The types of ticks that carry Lyme disease are not real common. If you're in the eastern U.S., you're much more likely to get Lyme disease. And Lyme disease is a very serious bacterial infection. It can be cured with antibiotics, but the problem is it's a spirochete. And so a lot of times the damage to cells is already done before the symptoms appear. That makes sense. So some diseases can be spread by ticks. If you get a tick on you, which is not uncommon if you're out in the outdoors, how do you take care of it? Hot needle.
Turn it counterclockwise.
Turn it counterclockwise. Those are all good wives' tells. Okay. You don't want to just pull it out, because what will happen is there will actually be pieces of their mouth part that will break off in you, and you can actually get infections from that. You don't want to touch them with anything hot. The reason why is when you do that, they regurgitate, so you're much more likely to get diseases that they have. So the way that you treat them is you take petroleum jelly, like a Vaseline, and you put it over, completely surround the tick, and that'll close off their breathing apparatus, their spiracles, and they'll actually back out to get air. Okay. It takes a little bit longer. Yeah, it takes a little bit longer to do that, but that's probably the safest way to do it.
How long will they stay in?
They can stay in there for a long time. I've actually seen ticks that are so filled with blood that they you can't even see their legs. They're almost as large as a dime. Out of all of the animals in the world, that I've messed around quite a bit with animals in my life, and but one of the few animals that give me the heebie-jeebies are ticks. I do not like ticks. Probably one of the grossest things I've ever seen in my life was I was hunting elk on a late elk hunt in December around here, and got this cow elk. And those of you that hunt know the first thing you do when you kill an elk, after you kill an elk, is you gut it, right? When you gut it, first thing you do is you cut around the anal opening, and if it's a female, around the vaginal opening, to get all that junk out of there so it doesn't ruin the meat. Well, I lift the tail up to do that with this cow elk, and I'll bet she had 100 ticks that were attached around her vaginal and anal opening. Oh, it was so gross. This is a mite. Some of the mites can be pests. For example, in beehives, one of the reasons why bees are disappearing is because of mite problems. Some mites, like this one, are aquatic. This is a drawing of a mite called a follicle mite. These follicle mites are found in the, probably on 80% of you or more. They're found around the pores around your nose and in your eyebrows. Every once in a while, when you get what you think is a zit in your eyebrow or around your nose, it may not be a zit, but what it might be is it might be where a mite died and clogged your pore, and you have infection there. You can actually pass mites from one person to another through intimate contact. So, you know, when you kiss somebody or make out with them or whatever, You know, that's one of the dangers or risks that you're taking is passing mites back and forth.
Is that what a blackhead is?
No. Blackheads are when you get dirt in your pores, typically. But it can cause some small problems like that. What they feed on is they feed on your dead cells. Most of the time you don't even know they're there. Probably you don't even care. But now you have something to think about, right? Any questions about the order of caries? The next order within the class Arachnida that we want to talk about is the order Pseudoscorpiones. The order name indicates kind of what they're going to look like. They're going to look like what? Scorpions, only we call them fake or false scorpions. The common name for these organisms are the Pseudoscorpiones. Pretty easy common name to remember. And when you look at this organism, it kind of looks like a scorpion, right? Why? It has the chelate pedipalpi. What's the difference, however? They have no sting at the posterior segment of the abdomen. And in addition, there's a big difference in size. Okay, these organisms are almost microscopic. This organism that you're looking at here is probably about 2 millimeters long. If you look at those big pebbles that are around the pseudoscorpion here, those are grains of sand. Okay, so this organism is just a couple millimeters long. So they have no posterior segment of their abdomen that's modified as a poisonous sting, and they are actually very, very small. This is another pseudoscorpion here. Where you find pseudoscorpions is you find them in dead and decaying organic material, for example, in a mass of dead leaves. When you dive into a pile of leaves, you're actually diving into a great fauna of animals. There's tons of insects and stuff in there that are feeding on the leaves. And then you have pseudoscorpions that actually feed on the insects that are feeding on the leaves. Okay, and so that's what they do, is they feed on organisms that are feeding on dead and decaying organic matter. Therefore, you find them in dead and decaying organic material like leaves and piles of grass and so forth. Okay. Any questions about the pseudoscorpions? The next order within the class Arachnida is the order Opiliones. The order Opiliones are sometimes called the harvestman spiders. Another type of harvestman spider that you're all familiar with are daddy long legs. Okay. The order Opiliones, or the harvestman spiders, have a unique look to them. They have an oval body that you really can't tell the difference between the cephalothorax and abdomen. There is a difference if you look very, very closely, but at first glance, it's really hard to see the difference. They just look like an egg almost, okay, have an oval-shaped body. In addition, their legs are very long in relationship to their body size. If you're wondering whether or not, if you're trying to identify something and you wonder if it's really a daddy long leg or a harvestman spider or something else, and the legs kind of look long but you don't know if they're long enough, what you need to look at is the second pair of legs on the harvestman spiders are always the longest. So the second pair, the first pair are the most anterior, second pair or the next pair back. Okay, so their legs are very, very long in relationship to their body size. Now, what's the thing that everybody's heard about daddy long legs?
The most poisonous spider, but the mouth's too small to bite you.
Okay, they're the most poisonous spider in the world, but their mouth parts are too small to bite you. The answer is false and false. Okay, first of all, they are not poisonous. Second of all, their mouth parts are big enough they can bite you. Okay. What's that? Yeah. If you don't believe me, go down to St. George and they have some harvestman spiders with bodies about this big. Allow one of them to bite you, and let me tell you, you will know that they've bitten you. Okay. The daddy long legs we have around here, their mouth parts are quite small, but they can still bite you. Right. These organisms are kind of a predator, a camouflage, sit and wait type of a predator. What they do is they get up on their long legs, and you've probably seen this, they'll kind of rock back and forth, kind of like winds blowing them. And what happens is smaller arthropods get underneath them for shade. And then what they'll do is they'll just kind of let their legs out and drop on their prey, and that's how they catch their prey. Okay. So they're kind of a sit and wait camouflage type of a predator. The last order that we want to talk about within the class Arachnida is the order Sophiugae. The order sulfugae includes your wind score pins, or what are sometimes called sun score pins. Okay. These organisms are common mostly in arid and semi-arid environments or dry environments like where we live. And we do have these organisms around here. This is a sun score pin, and these are actually quite common around here. Now, just to kind of give you an idea as to size, this is a grasshopper leg it has in its jaws here. Okay. The key characteristic of these organisms is their chelicera are modified as very large pinchers. Also, their cephalothorax kind of narrows down where their legs are, and then they have kind of what I would call a bulbous abdomen. It looks like a bulb. Okay. Also, their legs are very long. These organisms are fast. And the way that they catch their prey is they basically chase their prey down. They run their prey down. Okay. If you ever see these organisms, they are very, very quick. And if you ever get bitten by one of them, you will know it. This is a close-up view of the chelicera modified as crushing jaws here. Okay. Sometimes when they bite you, I've had them bite me where they won't let go, and you have to kind of kill them, pull them apart, and then pull the mouth parts out of your hand. Now these organisms, it's kind of interesting. I get calls from people quite a bit. They'll want me to identify all different types of animals. This is one that I get around here, especially if somebody's built a new home out kind of on the edges of town. My brother-in-law actually had some in his house up in, he built out by Harriman. River's been out kind of by Harriman. And I've had them in my house because I built on the edge of town. But they're usually quite solitary, so you usually only see one, maybe two or three of them at a time. But they're very, very fast. And I'll get calls from people, and they'll say, Josh, I have this thing that I'm really worried about in my house. And it's funny, most of them will say, it looks like a giant termite that runs fast and bites. Now, to me, that doesn't look anything like a termite, but that's generally the description that people give me. Okay, it's one of these organisms. And no, they're not toxic, they just hurt when they bite. So if you kill them, you're okay. They're actually quite hard to catch and sometimes hard to kill because they are so fast.
Are those out in the east and south?
Are they what?
Out on the east coast or in the south?
Not as much. It's mostly where it's drier. Any questions about the arachnids, the class Arachnida? Okay, on Friday we're going to talk about about three different classes: the class Crustacea, the class Diplopida, the class Chelopida, and the class Insecta. Okay, so if you're reading ahead.